ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat with a Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week is part two with Dennis Genis. Now, as we dig a little deeper into everything that was said in this episode, this was more angled towards parents and coaching and not so much about his kids anymore. But this is the philosophy he raised his kids with. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Well, and even when I coach now, I truly believe that when I coach now, I demand the highest of all the players. I think that's the key thing. I think, and I let it be known to them, listen, you're not going to make me a millionaire. Let's keep that one straight. So if you don't want to be here, then don't be here. But if you're going to be here, I'm going to try and make you the best I can make you be. And that would be sometimes, again, even now I find myself, I do things with players and teams where I know in my head, like, well, let's try this because this could challenge them. This could challenge them mentally. Like, oh my God, what's that? That's confusing. Because there's also that part too, the element of, it's not just about playing the game. You have to be able to understand concepts and patterns of play. And you've got to challenge them with that. People sometimes are worried about their child. If you start practicing, all of a sudden the team's all over the place and you go, what is that? What's going on? It's a mess. I always say to the kids, I said, that was tough, right? And they go, yeah. I said, well, good. That means you learned something different today. Because if you're going, if everything you do, you are comfortable doing, you're not growing. So I said, it's okay that you feel challenged today, and you may leave here feeling frustrated because it wasn't what you feel as though was the best practice. But I just believe that I want all kids I deal with to really end up playing the game a certain way. And the way I talk about that is like, you have to have every way to be able to play the game. You have to be aware of every way and different formations. Right now, if you look at the game and you look at the game worldwide, everybody's like, got to play out the back. Well, who says so? My kids aren't playing out the back because they can't pass the ball. So we're not doing that. If that doesn't suit me, then I'm not going to do it. Whereas I think, again, a lot of people get bogged down with thinking, this is what I'm going to do because it's what they say we should do. Anybody who watches any games on TV, you know when a team's losing, they're not playing at the back. It's gone. It's going up there. They change what they're doing. So the reality is, you know, what is successful to you? If I've got a kid that can run 100 meters in 10 seconds, guess what? When you catch that ball, goalkeeper, sometimes I want it gone. Because that's playing to that kid's strengths. And it's also showing me that you as a goalkeeper are now showing that you have some awareness and can distribute. So it's all aspects of the game. It's no point me having, it's like when I love Man City, right? In the Premier League. And they frustrate me so much. If I could meet with Pep, who's one of my heroes, I would tell Pep, well, hold on, I'm not lying. This is no lie. I would say, Pep, I'd love for you. I know you watch the games, but do you see how many times Arlen touches the ball? He's one of the best strikers in Europe and in the world. And if Kevin De Bruyne is not playing, all Haaland is doing is running from one side of the field to show to the other side of the field to show. And he's just doing that for 30 minutes per half and not touching the ball. And everybody's terrified of Haaland. Get him the ball. Get him the ball and play off him. But he needs to be touching the ball more. Because literally, I watched him play the other day. I think he touched the ball four times in the whole game as one of the best strikers. But it's, again, he scored 50-odd goals last year. And people go, oh, yeah, he got 50-odd goals last year. But there were so many games he hardly touched the ball. And this year, they know him a bit more, so he may not get so many. But how are you going to... So now I think there are times where that is a team situation where the team patterns of play are more important, and we'll get to you as a last resort. And you, so now it's not a fit more often than not. But then last year, like I said, there were games where he would just be on fire and he'd score hat tricks in the weaker games. Hat trick, hat trick, hat trick. So it boosted it and made it seem as though there isn't really an issue. Well, I still see the same issues. People will go, what are you talking about? He scored 50 odd goals. He could have scored 70. So this is the reality that even at that level, he could have scored 70. And so, but you've got to be able to look at all of these aspects. You've got to know what your kid's real capabilities are, you know, and then what are you measuring it with? I suppose it's sometimes that's where you have to play against somebody better to realize where's your kid really at. Because over here, people may measure the success that they want for their child as ODP, a certain club, if they can have the title of being in a FC Dallas or I play in Sola, so I have the warm-ups and everything, and we can strut around in those things. Are they playing? Are they starting? Are they growing? It's what is it? What are those things that you really want to measure this with? As to, and then what is the ultimate goal? Because like people take it for granted. I've got a kid right now, baby giraffe, I call him, because he doesn't even realize it that he's in that growth spurt because his legs, his mind's ready to go, but his legs aren't able to do Because I'm like saying to him, "I was that ball just always seems to be rolling past your toes. Wasn't?" And he's just in that stage. In a year's time, when he grows into those legs a bit more and his body, he's going to be trouble. But right now, if somebody was looking at him, they'd be like, "Yeah, I'm not sure about him. I'm not sure he's not really on it, you know." And then I've got another kid. He's an absolute athlete, absolute gazelle. Tough as nails. He couldn't control a brick. And so my focus with him now is like, I've got to get your touch. We've got to get your touch and skills down because you have something special. And what I'm saying about him having something special is athleticism and his toughness, his aggressiveness. And he just wants to run and tackle people. Those are things you can't put into people. So he's already, I look at those things and go, he's already got some of these traits. If we can put this with that, who knows? So it's, you got to, it's also, it's seeing different things with the kid. It's seeing the coach, because, you know, if the coach isn't up to it, then you got to make that choice too. Yeah, these are tough decisions that parents have to make. And if they're not really soccer savvy, knowing where to go next is a tough one. What tends to happen, though, is if they're in that club of stature, they're reluctant to leave because of that stature. And I it always blows my mind because I always tell people this. I have many a conversation. I say, you know, when your kid is going to school, if they're struggling in school, you generally may get a tutor, or you're going to go and talk to the teacher as to why they're struggling, and they're going to do more homework at home, and you're going to sit down with them to make sure they get it done. If they're not playing in soccer, but they're in the best club supposedly in the state, you're quite happy with that. You're quite happy to let them do that. Because you're going, well, we play for FC Dallas. When, again, you need to ask yourself the question, would my child develop better in, let's just say, an independent club or an independent team that is not listed as FC Dallas? Because if you're not playing, you're not developing.
That's been the conversation I hear a lot. It's like, oh, my kids, I think when I interviewed Juan a few weeks ago, or his episode released, he talks about the parents that have the Gucci parents. Like what I'm carrying around, my kid plays for FC Dallas or the big clubs. When I talked to Richard, he talked about the parents would put the FC Dallas banner in the front yard, but they wouldn't put the Triumph FC banner in the front yard. And at the end of the day, I always tell people, and I think we talked about this before, it's you chase the coach. And eventually you'll have to pick a club where your kid will have the chance to grow and be seen and developed. But the more I talk to these college coaches that I've talked to and people that have worked in the college world, it really doesn't matter what club you're in. It's the matter of the athlete you have. Yeah. In an interview I did, and he talked about for college-wise, it was if he couldn't watch the game, he would watch how the goalkeeper would warm up. If they were dedicated to warm up a certain way and be serious, they're going to be serious in the game.
Yeah,
and probably more so in the game than just in their warm-ups. And that was how they say, okay, I need to come back and watch this player. I got 20 minutes of them warming up. I'm going to go watch this next game, this next team. On another field. And it really made me think long and hard. And like you said, guest playing is another option, but that's where the ego has to go aside and the club has to let players do it. When you get to these big clubs, they'll let them guest play within the club.
Yeah.
But like my son, who has played on several different teams now within Under Solar, but he started off with Sting. He's still friends with some of those kids and has friendships with them. And he wants to go play soccer with them still, but he can't do it because he's playing for Club A and Club A rules don't allow it. You'd have to go to the very top to go get permission for him to just to go guest play. It deals nothing with his coach. It's the club that doesn't allow it. And just so he can go guest play with within the same club.
Yeah. But you see, remember, You're talking about million dollar businesses now.
Yes.
You know, when you start, and it's not even a joke when you say those numbers. You're talking about million-dollar businesses. You need to go get permission from the top because that's how it's ran. It's not. They don't know that child.
Right.
They don't know that family. They just need to know, like, hey, no, no. They're paying what? Yep, yeah, no, they can stay. They don't like it. They shouldn't be here. They know the rules when they sign up. It's just a business now. I really think it's just got so big as every aspect of the game has become business. If you think about tournament fees have gone up crazy all over anywhere you go now. If you go to a tournament, you have to pay, you have to stay where they tell you to stay.
Yes.
And that's what they call stay and play. And so they get paid, those hotels get paid, and the club putting the tournament on, that's another kickback for them. Because that hotel then kicks back per room to the club. Yes. So just for a club hosting a tournament, and it's a stay and play tournament, they make thousands just off that alone. And it's big. Even to register that, when I was in Albuquerque, there was this company called Stax. You had to register. They got to, it's like, you have to register through Stax. The parents have to go online and fill stuff out and the kids and upload a picture, and you have to register online. And I'm like going, no, I'll register my kids myself. I do the registration and I send it into the state. Oh, no, 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 no. And they literally, within a year, came in and were like, every club had to register through them. So now we've been told, and I don't even know where they came from. They're nothing to do with anything I know. They just come in and gone, hey, you guys have to register through us. And then they take their percentage now. And it's like, who are you? And it's because it's people see how much money it is in there. There's so much money. And sadly, I don't mind people making money. I just think that if you're making money, then you should really care. You should really, really, really care. Like, as to where's that lower team? What is that lower team about? You know, what's going on with it? What's my fourth team about? But I still have those arguments about lower teams and fourth teams in clubs. It's their choice. These people are choosing that. So you kind of go, when we're talking about coaching kids to the next level and what's it really all about, and it's all about, it's about choice, and parents will make choices that they make totally different choices what they would do with their kid in a sport to what they would do with their child educationally. Because in education, they'll make common sense, smart choices. They will. They're not having their kid go to that school if that school is a problem school, or if they're not going to get taught properly. Then they have that kid out of their quick time. They won't do it. Even if it's a private school and they're paying the money, if that private school is not producing, they're taking them to the next private school. But they won't do it for soccer. They won't do it for soccer. It's like, as long as I've got that name, I'll deal with it.
Right. And I think that is where hearing your kid's story, it's like you had the inside scoop on everything going on. And I think that, like you said, you're on the other side of the equation why coaching your kids. But as a parent, I think this is where the education, having conversations with coaches, having conversations outside of our general comfort zone as parents. I feel like I'm very fortunate because I get fed all this lovely knowledge from folks like you. And I feel like my son has a better chance of progressing than the kid next to him. And the only reason why is because my wife and I both are on the same page. It's just, we have some great coaches around us that say, listen, who cares if you win or lose? When that college recruiter comes to you, when your kid's in a junior in high school, are they going to ask about what their record was when they were 13 years old or how many goals they scored when they were 13?
Yeah.
No, they don't care. And that's the thing. It's parents are so caught up on today.
Yeah.
Than they are tomorrow. It's like, I don't care if my son's on a losing team. Like, we've sat through this season. I'll be honest. Like, the players are talented. Don't get me wrong. And they finally are winning games. Last two weekends ago, they had their first draw. This past weekend, they finally got their first win. In the tournament, they did fine. They were in a middle tier, and they played well in their first tournament together. But if they went back and played that same tournament now, I think they'll do much better than where they got knocked out at. And that's the thing. It's the progression. It is. I always like the meme on the parent groups. It's the straight line that's a bunch of circles. As long as it's going up, I don't care where it's going. It's like my son's, like you talked about it, and it really kind of hit me because we tell my son this all the time. It's, if you're not going to go out there and hustle, we might as well take you back to rec and save ourselves some money, because you're playing at a competitive level now. It's not about winning. It's about being better you than the last game. Yes. It's not about anything else. It's all I care about is, are you better today, Landon, than
not? Well, winning is, it's like in the game, I always tell people when we work on defending, I'm like, winning the ball is a bonus when you're defending. Winning the ball is a bonus. When you're out there dangling your leg and stabbing and everything, you're doing that because you've lost your discipline. They don't understand that delaying somebody is defending.
Yes.
If they don't go past you, that's good defending. But then if you win the ball, it's a bonus. Well, winning the game is a bonus. Right. And then there's how you win the game. And then it's how you lose the game. All of these things are things that you have to put into a child as well. And you have to get used to them. You have to put, there's a way to win. And I used to coach teams and people would win 8-9-0. And I'd say, get in. And I'd be like, that's not good enough. And the parents would be there and they'd be like, what's he going off about? I'm like, that's not good enough. And they'd be like, well, whoa, we just won 9-0. You were just being selfish. You're just trying to outrun them because you knew you could. And so you did it. And it's just then that's going to set you up to have bad habits. We want to always try to maintain good habits. Okay. Just because you know you could beat somebody, let's challenge it. You can still challenge yourself within that environment. And so, but then again, you have to hold them accountable, because if you don't, you'll have some coaches going, ah, brilliant job. Yeah. So they leave there. And guess what? They'll go again and do it. And then when they get that game where they should have learned how to play a 1-2 and whip a ball in the box, they've not done it because they've been just dribbling past people and you didn't call them up for it. But now you want to hold them accountable because they didn't do it 3 weeks later. Well, you set that standard because you were happy winning. But there's a way to win, and there's a way to lose, and there's a way to draw. And so, like you say, winning is a bonus, and they all lead in everything. All these things lead into life. All these things lead into life's lessons as to, you know, when you leave college, are you going to want to just suddenly get into that job? I'm a millionaire. I got that job. I'm a millionaire. Well, you may have to go out there and bust a gut and get rejected and work out how to deal with rejection. And you may not find yourself until you're 30.
Right.
And there are people who are still trying to find themselves now at 40 and 45 with degrees and masters and going, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I keep going in and out of jobs. Well, soccer and sports is life. If you're straight with yourself and you're straight with your kids, and they realize that it's not always going to be as easy as you think, or you may not always get what you think, you're setting them up for life. We had a couple of kids this weekend. Somebody tackled them. They got up and wanted to start. I'm like, we're not doing, it's not a boxing match. Get off the field. And I said to them, I says, look, so if you'd have got a red card because you felt as though you wanted to retaliate because somebody pushed you or nudged you, how many players would we have left on the field? 8. So we're playing down because of you and your little temper tantrums. Can't have it. Can't have it. So the only way to deal with something like that is go score.
Right.
Go score. Go win the game. And shake hands and smile. There you go. Good one, mate. And it's putting those things, because again, I was raised on that. And again, I grew up in a time with a lot of racism. And I had to deal with my way up, the way I dealt with it. And my answer was always to put the ball in the net and go smile at them people. Because it was the only answer.
Right.
It was just a different time. It was like the only the refs didn't care. The fans were worse. The only answer you had was to score and go and wave to them.
Right.
So that's what I did. And in fact, the worst thing anybody could have done to me back then, that was me, was say something derogatory. Because now I'm like going, if I didn't really feel like it, because it was a bit chilly, because you know what England's like, if I didn't really feel like it, and you came out with something, I'm like, excuse me? Okay, here we go, game on. So it's finding what motivates you to get through each moment.
I think that's key. It's you talk about emotions, and this is, my son just played in a game this weekend. I have not seen him like this since he's been very young. And he had a complete breakdown in the middle of the game. And he got angry and frustrated. He was yelling at the ref. And like, we made him apologize to the ref at the end of the game. And the ref and I were talking after the game. It's like, I had to stop him. Like, I want my son to apologize to you, because there's no reason for my son to be talking to an adult like that, especially an authority figure at 9 years old. And he owes you an apology. And him and I were talking, and he goes, no, he has passion. He has drive for the game. Like, he understands the game. Not many kids actually understand. They only react to everyone around them. He goes, he was reacting because he understood what that meant and understood. And he goes, but my son was like, heaped everything in him. It's like any player in his way was getting leveled. If he had the ball, he dribbled up the field, made beautiful passes. And then one of the times, like, buddy, you need to slip. I'm saying to myself, you need to slip the pass, slip pass, slip pass. And he ran into three players. And sure enough, he did not slip past the ball early enough. And it went off another player, but
he's gone.
But he was gone emotionally. And his coach is like, that's what I want to see how you play every time, Landon. I want you to play with the emotion. And it's like, for us, we know our kid. It's like, if he gets too high, he'll level a kid and get a red card.
Yeah.
But I always tell him before a game, this was given to me by another coach, was Matt Montaigne. And it was, your emotions affect your attitude. Your attitude affects your results.
Yeah.
And the other thing is,
personalities. I love personalities in young players.
Yes.
I love personality. I get that bit of cheek, because I believe that, you know, I'll set the line, but I like that personality. I don't mind sometimes, you know, that kid just kind of having a little bit of attitude, because if it's them, I don't want to quash that. But there is a balance, like you say. You have to have that balance and understanding of, if it starts to impact not only your game, but everybody else around you, then we have an issue. Then there is a problem. You know, it's like, no, that's going over the line. Now we need to address that. And if you don't want to address it, you ain't playing.
Right.
So, and it's a hard thing. It's very difficult. I mean, my daughter and my son, they learn. I actually said to them, listen, I don't need to hear you back chatting me when I tell you something on the pitch. I says, all you need to do, if you had any sense, is just turn to me and go, got you, Dad. So you got to do, I heard you. Well, in the end, all the players started doing that. Yeah, we hear you, coach. Okay. And I'm like, don't do that to me. I know you can hear me over there. So, but you know, so I'd be like, don't ignore me. And then I'd be like, just do that, at least that knowledge that you heard me. And so, because they should have emotions about things. They may not be happy about things. It's like, just because you're the coach, you don't control them. They don't mean to miss that. They don't mean not to do that. So they're going to have emotions about it. And they're going to have emotions because somebody probably talking some smack on the field with them. We don't know. We can't really hear it.
Right.
But that's where I would always say to people, well, you got to deal with it with what you do. There's nothing you can say that's going to matter. The only thing that's going to matter is you need to win the game and shake hands and smile.
Right.
That's everything's done. But if you lose the game and they were tormenting you as well, then that's just compounded that. So, right. But it's teaching life skills, true life skills, and being honest with kids, and being honest with parents, and not being above yourself. It's like, maybe I got to come down for my child to have some success, to come back up. You know, it's the hardest thing for parents to understand. Your child's going to be on the development team. Well, it's the best place for them. And trust me, I'm going to demand the same of them when we get practice.
Right.
But for now, they're going to play more than they would if they were. So you could say they're on the first team over here. If they're on the first team over here and they're playing 20 minutes of a 70-minute game, and they're on the development team and playing 50, 55 of a 70-minute game, Trust me, they're going to develop. And then eventually now you get called up to the first team to get some minutes. And we keep just adding a little bit of that because that is the process that it should be. It should be that process.
I think parents get caught up on the word developmental team and or B team or A yeah. team. And being a parent where my kid has helped out on both teams, and it's like I know where my kid stands on one team and the other team. It is, I don't want my kid to ever be the number one kid on a squad because that means my kid doesn't have anywhere else to work towards. My yeah. kid needs that drive knowing that he's not the best to in order to move up. And because that's what he says, I want to be better than so-and-so. Like, okay, then go show us that you're better than him. Yeah. Go put that frustration and anger on the ground. And that's what you're talking about. It's parents that have to accept that my kid may be this quality right now, but in 6 months from now, when we're able to jockey rosters around, he may be up on the other squad now and able to outperform some of those players, but he had to learn or she had to learn lessons A through B here first.
I go back to the school analogy again. Again, I think it's just so relevant, and I think parents take it for granted. If your kids are going to school, they're going to school and they're in certain grades and they're studying certain, you know, topics. And so, and at certain ages, some kids may be placed in a iLearning situation and some kids may get held back. But the school is doing what they think is best for that, for the, your child. And you accept that. It goes back. You accept it. They don't accept it as easily in sport. Now, I'm not sure if it's because they're paying. So some people actually do think, if I'm paying this money, I should be playing. And that's another weird one. So, but the truth of the matter is where is the best place for your child to be playing? That's the most important thing. People, I think all the other stuff is irrelevant. Where are they going to get more playing so they can keep developing? And then understanding that your child developing in soccer is just like in life. You have to understand that I've seen kids who are world class at 6 years old, and then they're awful at nine. And you go, why are they so awful at nine? Well, it's because everybody's caught up with them virtually in age now and strength, and these things happen. So you do see a lot of phenoms at young ages. Okay, well, let's check you out in 3 years. Let's see where you are at in 3 years. Athletically, some teams, they put the fastest player and the biggest player in the back. And they go, that kid just is a train and just wrecks everybody as they come through. And then they win and they think they've got a good team. Well, that poor kid in the back, that's all he's done. And they think that's going to develop them and it's going to be success. But eventually, it gets caught. Everything catches up physically and mentally. And people forget that when it comes to soccer. They don't, parents forget to look at it from the similar concept, through the similar eyes, as the child's growth outside of the sport. They forget that. If you look, because if you're looking at their growth outside of sport, you will go, oh, well, I don't expect them to understand that yet in school because they're only at this age. Oh, I expect that kind of behavior because it's that growth thing right now that they're just a bit naughty. They're just, there's these growth, pattern of growth outside of natural growth of their child, outside of sport, they'll deal with. But you now you come to sport, they don't acknowledge that. They don't acknowledge that growth path. That there is, they don't actually don't acknowledge that there's a growth path of your age, the mental development, the athleticism, the physical growth that you may have, the growth spurts. How long are you going to be growing through a growth spurt with giraffe legs? Maybe giraffe legs. Is it a year? Is it 2 years? My daughter went through it. It killed me. It killed me because she ran like a giraffe. It was just, she was like wobbling. But then once she got going, she was gone. But those first 5-6 yards, which are the most crucial at the next level, she didn't have. And there was nothing that we could do about it. Nothing. We were just like, oh. She's got to wait, give her 5 yards and she'll be there, you know, up 1, 2, 3. Oh, she's warming up now, and then she'd go. But a lot of people don't pay attention to those details when they look at their child. They're not even paying attention. Like, So people talk about, oh, my knee hurts. Well, your child's growing. And people, I saw somebody send a video the other day. The child was doing weights and they were 11 years old. Oh. And I'm like, hey, you need to be careful with this weights because they're still growing. They don't need to be doing that. That you can do, you can do your own weight, your own body weight. Everything you do, you can use your own body weight. But that's now as a parent. Now, credit that they're trying to do something, but it's wrong. They're trying to do something and it's wrong. They just think, okay, we're going to be doing this. We're going to do some shooting. We're going to do some weights. And but no, that's wrong. The same thing as, so kids will play a game and the parents go, let's go to the park. That wasn't good enough today. We're going to go do some running and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. No, that's not necessarily right either. Sometimes I would literally just be away and not even talk about the game with them, with my kids. It was sometimes I would just like, all right, let's go do this. And they'd be like, they didn't say anything. They didn't say like, are you going to talk about it? And I'd be like, let's just go. Let's go do this. And it was something totally away from the game because they know. And so sometimes just forgetting about it and just going and having some fun is probably more important, is more important. And that one of my last things with this is like, you know, one of the things I hate to see is when a game's been played and a parent's walking off with their kid and you can see them in their faces of the kid. I hate that. I hate it. I saw it the other day again, and I'm like, and this poor kid was like, you could see him, his old body language, and the parent was really, and it took everything I had not to call that parent over. I'm like, don't do that. But I wasn't fully the coach at that time, so I didn't feel as though it was my place to step in. But then I just thought to myself, that poor kid, what are they going through this weekend? Because that dad, well, I know if I gave him a ball, couldn't juggle it five times, is in his kids. I know it for a fact. You can just see him a mile away. I know it for a fact, because I often want to do that with parents. I'm like, hey, here's a ball. Juggle. Here's a ball. And then a test I used to do when I ran that kids program, 3 to 5 year olds, and the parents had to be there for the hour. And they had to participate. They had to participate. And so when we play these games, dribbling games and running games, we make the parents chase them. And the parents would be there. And I would say to them, do you know how long that was? They'd be like, what? I said, 30 seconds. And they'd be like, what? I says, yeah. I said, so when you're on the sideline yelling at your kid and you can't even control the ball and run, remember that. And that was only 30 seconds. Because to me, it was a great way for them to realize this isn't as easy as it seems.
I think that's the thing parents forget. It's like I give my son a very hard time. Like we'll pass the ball back and forth and he's warming up and he'll make bad passes. And I make sure when we practice, like we'll pass the ball back together and I'll make a bad pass. Because dad, you should have this down by now. I go, I don't play soccer every day like you do. And my next comment is that I'm also not the athlete that you are either. And you should be making great passes because of everything we do. And it's, but at the same time, I'm watching him play. And I think this is where parents need to break it down when they're watching their kids play. And I always set my watch. I try to remember, I put my watch on. And when he's on, I watch how he does when he's controlling the ball, when he's doing. And as a parent, we know when our kids are sucking wind, so to speak, and tired. And watching how he carries himself in those moments and like watching the time and how long it takes him to stop that behavior, that those mannerisms. And, or is he just being constantly being hit at by the attacking, by the opponent and being at by the offense and being hit, attacked all the time. And how is he carrying himself in moments of frustration? And that's the thing. It's like, I think it's maybe because I look at them as my kid. I know this sounds horrible. He's number 18. I look at him as a jersey number. I look at him as a stat. I don't look at him as Landon Babcock, my son. I'm looking at Landon Babcock as stat. Is he getting better in the first half of the game or the better second half of the game? It's you mentioned something earlier and you're talking about doing better. Like they should be getting it every single time. It's like you're talking about both your kids. They should be getting it because you know what they're capable of.
Yep.
And what they're it's being that little bit more selfish of a player and just putting the ball where you know you need to put it, and if it's shooting or passing, whatever it may be. And I think parents forget that they're 9 at one point, and even when they're 18, it's if they don't have the proper development behind them, where they aren't having the confidence behind them, they can't get there. And I think the great example of this, and I hate to use FC Dallas again, but Bernard Kamungo. Do you know he never touched a real soccer ball until he was 14 years old? And he's 19, has a professional pro contract with FC Dallas, and you still see the hesitation in him. It's because he's never really truly had a chance to play at that high level.
Yeah.
But let me tell you how many goals he has this season. He's put up some numbers for not being a starter at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
In the MLS. And I think what you said, it's like stats matter and you have to look at stats. It's, I think of my son, it's like, how many tackles does he get in a game? How many clean passes does he get? And that's what I focus on. I'm not focusing on if they win or lose. It's, is he getting 50% of his tackle?
Yeah. That's how you got to look at it. All those things are key, because you have to have something that, you know, that for development, you have to go, okay, how can you do better? How could you do better? No matter, even you can have great game, but how could you be better? And so if you know how you can be better, or if you know what, you know, like I always used to analyze my game. I didn't care. I was the same with myself too. If I scored 3 or 4 in a game and I know I could have had 6 today, you know, I analyzed, I did that to myself. So I'm pretty sure that's probably why I carried it on with my own children too. So it's like, but that part of that also, I remember being here, and I was actually going to talk to you about the MLS thing, actually, right, when you mentioned that guy. It was like, but if I look at the MLS, right, people probably give me a lot of grief for it. When you look at the MLS is so far behind world football, generally.
I won't disagree. Most people will agree with you there. It's coming along, but it's slow.
Yeah. But again, I still believe that they control that. They're in control of how that is. The reality of the MLS, if they really want to get anywhere near that, some of the snobbery has to go away. They have to create, this country has to create a scouting system. It has to. It has to have a scouting system that is not based on class. So then you can now bring players into your academies. Now they have those, what do they call it, NTX or whatever, or you may have one team that's linked to an MLS club. It's not enough. You need to you need to go 9s, 10s, 11s, something like that, or 12s. The older ones, to me, aren't even relevant. It's 9, 10s, 11, 12s, and they become your academy. And they don't play in the club anymore. And you recruit those kids because you've been out to Plano and everywhere else and Grapevine, and you've got scouts that are watching games and bringing kids in. The only thing that they have anything like that is you got to pay to have your kid go to some soccer school around the country somewhere. That's where the MLS is missing out. You should be bringing these kids in, and you should create your own leagues for all the MLS teams. They're doing it with the older kids, but then all the MLS teams in that age group, these kids get taken at 9, and then you keep them like you would the academies around the world. And you don't keep score. You do the same thing that is working around the world. You do the same thing. Because we have the numbers of people. We have the numbers. But you've got to be able to then say, okay, you know what? We're going to, if you all have, say, 4 age groups in your clubs, and you're taking them into this academy, you have 4 age groups, say, and let's give them the older one. Okay, so you've got 5. But if everybody's developing these kids through their system, guess what's going to happen? You're going to have better kids coming through because your foundation is stronger. Right now, all the MLS really banks on is, oh, who's about to retire? Oh, such and such. Well, let's bring them in. And let's bring them in. Oh, they're not really doing well in England. Let's bring them in. That's not sustainable.
No.
It really isn't. The rare times that it's a great success is if you get those big names, Beckhams and Neymars to come and Messi's, But when they're not playing, what do you still have? You still
Right.
don't. Look at Barcelona yesterday. A 17-year-old came on for his debut, came on in the last few minutes, scored the winning goal. 17. Right? In their academy. They've been grooming this kid in their academy. There's another kid there now. I think he's 17. In the first team, he's playing. If you don't have an academy to groom the young players, you're always going to be left with your selections through to national team being elitist. That is a fact. You're going to end up being with the ones that can afford it are the ones that will get the opportunity. You don't deal with millions that cannot afford it. That young kid I was telling you about last week, he should be in someone's academy.
And that's the thing. It's how do you convince soccer? And I know Wilco's the one that made me really think long and hard about it. It's the one thing that you guys both talked about then, and that was, we're not a soccer developed country because we don't have a soccer developed community. And it's like, you can go, I live in Keller. I should be able to go anywhere within a 10-minute drive and find a soccer club for my son to go play with at a young age. And as he goes through the programs, and when you actually have semi-pro teams, which they're getting better with here in DFW, we're getting more and more semi-pro teams. The UPSL is really big here, and for the men's side, and Women's Soccer Premier League, whatever it is in the Metroplex, they have that here, and it's growing. But the problem is that there's no academies attached to it. There's nothing for these kids to go through. And I think if to do what you want, we would have to find businesses and places to be willing to help support it. And I think, and then when you do have a transaction, letting a player go from A club to B club, there has to be either some type of an exchange of monetary status. It's like, I'm starting to believe, like, if Coach A, let's say you gave, Dennis, if you gave Coach B a player, you should get some type of a kickback because you've developed that player for so long. And there's nothing like that, because if you go to every other soccer developed country, when they exchange players, there's something else going on. It's either a player exchange or a monetary going on in the background to give credit or whatever it may be. If, like I was saying, trying to get to earlier, was if FC Dallas said, well, Coach Dennis at club such and such for the last 5 years has coached this kid, I guarantee the amount of kids that you'd be getting coming into you would be higher because your name's associated with that one player. Mm-hmm. It's nope. We develop it. He's our player now. And whoever did anything before him does not matter.
Yeah.
And that's what's wrong. And it's like, how do you, and this has been the question I've posed to coaches in the past, was how do you give the development credit and praise to the proper authorities?
Well, it's the development, and it's also culture. The culture in America is club, right? It's club. It's not on the professional level. Nobody thinks about, nobody starts out in club and thinks about playing in the MLS or the Women's League. Nobody. Right. The first thing they talk about is club, high school, hopefully varsity, JV. Then from there, it's college. Then from there, hopefully an opportunity to play in UPSL, WS, and MLS. So it's way down the line. And when we talk about, and it's, again, the fashionistas of these FC Dallases, and they want to wear all the gear, that's the culture that they've created.
Right.
Well, if you have an academy that has so many kids, younger ages, right, guess what? You're going to create a culture. You will create that culture with, because those young kids come with parents. They come with parents, so they're your fan base. And now you've got, oh, my kids at FC Dallas. Oh, my kids at, you know, Colorado Rapids, or my kids at, and it goes around the whole country. And then you have a system that's all around the country. And where are we going? Oh, we're going to go play. If FC Dallas is going to play Houston, Well, guess what? Our academy kids are going to play Houston. And we and in Houston have a setup where they have appropriate size fields for appropriate age groups to play their academy games at. Once those academy games are played, all of those kids now go to watch the first team. That is how it works. And then it becomes this, you start to create this culture from a young age of what the professional environment is about. There ain't no culture about the professional environment here because the culture here is club.
Right. I will say, like, if most, like, I never knew this until I started to talk to parents that have kids that play on the MLS Next side of soccer here. From U13 and up, they all travel at the same time. If they're playing down in Houston, the Dynamos, U13 yep. to U18 are all traveling down to Houston, getting on buses. Parents find their own way. See ya.
Yeah.
And it's like, I never do this. Then if they take a special trip, like some with FC Dallas, I know they do a trip to Mexico and I know they do a trip to Spain. And parents, we're taking them. We need your permission. And
don't get me wrong. Remember years ago, there wasn't even one team linked to the MLS teams.
Right.
So they're heading in that right direction. And I know what their problem is half the time because everything leads to impacting club. Because if you're going to have those teams from those younger ages, you now need to have coaches, which now means you're probably going to have to take coaches from the clubs.
Yes.
And so now those clubs are going to lose those better coaches. So everything impacts everybody. So, you know, it's a tough one to say, oh, this is the route that I'm going to take. And how do you financially deal with it? How do you financially cope with it is I suppose the big question. But then again, you deal with it because whoever sponsors your MLS team, they're sponsoring everybody.
Right.
So when I'm negotiating with you about my sponsorship, you're sponsoring everybody in the club, which is even better for you as a sponsor as well, because it's going to put you out there more. So they can address it by saying, you sponsor us. These ODP programs, get a sponsor. Every state, get a sponsor and have them sponsor your kids to play in ODP, a majority of those costs. And so you're good then because you have a uniform. Who gives you the uniform? Is it Adidas? Is it Nike? Okay, here you go. You're going to give us a kickback on our uniforms. And that feeds into your financial of the program. Instead of it being $400 a kid to try out, hey, it's $150.
Right.
You may actually get it's reasonable, but it's something. And in reality, they do, I know in the past, they usually do one tournament, like a regional tournament. They're not playing every week.
Right.
So you're
once
doing
a month normally.
Yeah. So you can afford it's affordable if you just choose to make it affordable. So there are ways, and the beauty is I think it's heading in that way, and it seems really slow because I do think it is slow. I think that they're not touching. I still don't think that they're touching the streets, the street ballers. They're not anywhere near the street ballers yet, and that's what their downfall is.
And that was a conversation I think I can go back to. I had a conversation with someone and I said, until soccer is played in the poorest communities in our country, just like basketball and football and baseball are,
yep.
We won't be there anytime soon. And the problem is that everything's set up for basketball or football yep. or baseball. And it's like someone goes in Mexico. Now they have conversion courts where you can play basketball or like futsal yeah. soccer. And,
yeah.
and it's
yeah.
like, why aren't we doing that in our communities? And how do we advocate that in our communities? And like you said, the kids that are phenomenal ballers may only play in high school and that's the only chance they get. And they never get a look at because of where they're cares. At. I mean, no one cares.
There's probably more kids. Street kids that leave here to go and play in Mexico and places like that, and they would play in their own play in America.
Yes,
and that's crazy.
And the question is,
we've seen some of these discussions. We've seen some of these discussions with players like, I have to choose between Mexico and America. You know, because they went to play in Mexico because America didn't care,
right?
And then now you're this player. Now I'm interested.
Right. And now, oh, now I see that you're actually developed. I'm going to take my gamble on you. And that's the thing I don't get. It's like I'm watching you watching all these young kids that are going up getting their national call up right now here in the United States, and they have multiple places. But once they get so many caps, they have to pick it after the age of 18. And the question is, where do they pick? And it's, but it's politics. It's the politics at its finest of.
And it goes all the way up. It goes, I remember, I won't keep you long, but John Barnes played for England, one of my favorite players way back when. And he's from Jamaican heritage roots. And he would travel with England, and he had a Jamaican passport. And so they would have, this is what happened. They would have to get him to the airport, and then they would have to talk to these people, and they'd be like, okay, yeah, we're working on this and working on this. And then they'd let him go with England. So he'd go and play for England without being a British citizen for his first bunch of games. But they snagged him and took him to play for their country. So it happens even at the highest, the highest points. But again, at the highest points, you look at some of these countries who, like the Jamaican women, qualifying for the Women's World Cup, they're just not managed well.
Right.
Financially. So these things get compounded because these associations, even you have an opportunity and you're not taking care of it. And it ends up being somebody local, Bob Marley's daughter, who decides to fund it. Come on. How is we're talking about this as a kids level. As an association, your women's team has qualified for the World Cup and you can't get that organized. And so some of these associations do this to themselves because that's why they end up with these conversations. Do I pick here or do I pick here? And half of the time, they turn around and go, I'm going to pick here because it's much more, even though we're giving it grief, it's way more organized and structured and financially secure than, again, these countries that are still behind or don't want to catch up and do the right thing. You know, so until there's a lot of sides to this where I think some of these countries also need to invest in the development of the sport for their players all the way through, because then people would make those choices if they thought it was a secure choice. So, and then I'm still open that my daughter one day, because she's what, 24 now, I'm still open that she's taking a sabbatical right now, which is one of those things I was telling you about. I can't, or we can't, make them play. They have to choose. She's chose right now that she's not so interested in playing anymore. And I'm like, okay.
take the knife out of the heart, please, please.
And it's like, I'm going, you've chosen to not play at the most crucial time of when the women's sport is really growing all over the world, and what she has is unique, because as I was saying before, watching the women's team, this was for years, the US women's team was so athletic, strong, fast. They had goal scorers, defenders, goalkeepers, but they were so athletic. And I actually watched them train once in California. Whoa, these women are they're for real. And but I kept saying, when I'd watch them play these other countries in games and practice and World Cups, I'd be like, man, you know, if they just got themselves, I don't understand it. Why didn't they just get fitter? Just get fitter. That's all you got to do. And then I'd be like, oh my gosh, if they had a goal scorer on that team, America needs to watch out, because these countries are slowly coming.
Yes.
And it happened. It got closed in, and now no one's sitting there going, oh, America's favorites anymore. But they're slowly now coming back into it a bit more. You got Rodman's daughter, who's a goal scorer.
She's phenomenal.
You have to have a goal scorer. You have to have a goal scorer. I don't care. Anybody says you need a goal scorer.
Went on defense.
He got it down the middle. The goalkeeper, central defenders, and the mid, goal scorer. You got to have it. And the two most, I would say the two most important, to be fair, with the two specialist positions is the goalkeeper and the goal scorer. People go, what? Well, they're specialist positions. That's just how it is, because you can't argue with it. Goalkeepers, they train on their own. They go do their thing. Strikers usually are out there having to shoot, doing their thing, finishing, because there's a heart to it. It's a natural knack for goalkeeping and a craziness for goalkeeping and a natural knack for scoring. So the two go together. You see,
no, I'm not saying anything is wrong with it. I mean,
it's just there.
I think someone's special to get in the goal.
Yeah, I'm not trying to do it. So I just think that, and she has that. That's what frustrates me, is that she has that knack of scoring. Before I go, like I say, it upsets me.
It's
so
back.
We're parents, we don't worry about what the kids are going to do. My daughter at 24 still is like, put a dagger in me, because she has the ability to play and she's choosing this period not to play. I'm hoping that she'll come back into it, because I believe, and I keep telling her, they're just waiting to see you because they don't know you are. Because you have this natural ability. You are a goal scorer. And I'm like, and she could play for Jamaica. She can play for England. She can play for the US. And I'm like, just go play. But she's no longer a child. She's an adult. She's taking a master's, which is great, in England right now. And I'm hoping that she'll get the hitch back to, because I'd love to see her play for a national team. So I could go, okay, both of them. They both played and both played for the national team somewhere. And I can rest in peace.
I think I can understand what you're trying to say and have that proud dad moment. And it's a hard one.
Yeah, it's tough. She's, you know, I'm so proud of how far they've both come with it. Because, I mean, it's a tough journey for kids. And I never knew the journey. I never really realized and respected the journey. The college journey is so tough. I don't think many people talk about how tough that is, because you're having to study, take classes, and then get out of your class and go train. You know, then you may have to go on a road trip and study while you're on the bus and study after the game. I never really realized. And then be away from home, maybe for the first time. You know, it's you're 19 and you're 18, 19, and you're gone. And she was a long way away. So that journey was probably the toughest. When I've seen documentaries about college and sport, and that's when I really realized, oh my gosh, she was amazing, because that was a tough journey. Tougher than my son going into professional, because he just went and played professional, you know. And that's all he did.
She had two jobs doing them at the same time, and he had one.
Yes. So sometimes people talk about college, and I want my kids to play in college, and I'm like, yeah, it's not all it's cracked up to be, because even like she played D1, and sometimes I was like going, is that a D1? Is that D1 soccer right there? So it's all about, you can be D1 and it's awful. So people don't need to realize that you could be D3 and they play some brilliant stuff, and then you can go D1 thinking it's D1 and it's like, that is awful.
That's what I keep on hearing from college coaches. It is, doesn't matter where you play, you're going to have great teams, bad teams, rebuilding years, whatever it may be, or just colleges that have a foundation to support their soccer club, and that's where the money has to go. But they don't really try to do great recruiting to get kids in.
No, it was I'm sure it was a great time for her. It was a great time for us that she actually got the opportunity. And so she got a degree out of it too. And it was a great school, and the coaches, to be fair, no matter what I think about them, they did a great job in taking, basically they took care of it for 4 years for us. So, but the journey never ends, I suppose, until she, like the journey's ended with my son, because he's not playing anymore, but he's still going on, and he's a TV commentator, sports commentator now, and he's traveling the world doing that, because he played in the World Cup. This is one of the best things for him as well. His hat-trick was, he played in the World Cup. No, I took him to the World Cup when he was a kid in America. Actually, I brought him to the 94 World Cup. And he's like, I'm going to play in that. So he came here. And then he played in the World Cup. And then he drew. He did the drawing for the World Cup. as one of the O's. So I'm like going, so you've went to watch it, you've played in it, and then you've done the official drawing for the World Cup. So I'm like, there's nothing more to say for you because you just had hit the hat trick of the World Cups there. So he's on his way doing what he's continued his career after the game, which is still, you know, still proud of and watching him on TV doing this stuff. And so he's done. I don't have the stress of him now playing and having to yell at him anymore. So I'm just hoping that I get a few more years to get on my daughter, which I think I will somehow. I think she'll get back into it somehow. So I think she misses it, but she's doing her master's. So I'll say finish that then and then get back to playing.
The question is she still picking up the ball? That's the question.
Well, yes, I think she is. I know she says she's working out regularly, which is a good thing. So I've not gone back into it and said, is it with a ball? You know, because it's now at that point where, you know, if you talk about it, will she push away more?
Right.
So it's like I just leave it and let her, she'll say whatever she wants to say. And I'll know when she comes home this Christmas if it's really still there, because usually when she comes home, she wants to play. But I believe she's still touching the ball, and I believe she'll get back into it. And I say to her, you've got a good 10 years where you could have some really good experiences.
She's still in pretty young.
Game right now. You definitely could, because she's got it. So, yeah.
Dennis, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a joy, mate.
I could do this all day long. This is the one thing I have learned is that talking to everyone who I talk to, you shared who you, when I interviewed last time, you shared your greatest influences on you. And I will have to say, when we got done talking last time, I had all my notes. I've re-listened to I don't listen to the actual true episode. I listen to what we recorded.
Right.
And which is pretty close to the real thing. But what you shared with me, and as a parent that has children that play sports, my daughter does gymnastics and swim, my son that plays soccer, you make it, I'm not doing a horrible thing, because you made the comment in the very beginning. It's when they're tired of it. Yeah. And that's the question I always ask my son. And as a parent, that is very helpful. And I want to thank you for that, because I don't want my kid to be burnt out. He gets final say when he plays, when he doesn't want to play. He has his commitment to his team, but if he wants to get extra touches by guest playing with some coaches within mm-hmm. his club, he's allowed to. And you just reaffirm that, for my family at least, we're on the right path to keep him in love with the game.
If a child says, as soon as they say that, don't bother. As soon as they go, I don't know, they're not interested. Don't do it.
And let them be a kid. Simple.
Yeah, just listen to your kid. So it's been a joy. And good luck to everybody out there. Remember, it's a long journey. It's not a short one. So
yes,
stick with it.
Hello, I hope you guys all enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Dennis' insight into this beautiful game that we all are enjoying and loving watching our players play is fascinating. And learning to take a step back and letting our kids be kids and letting coaches do their work and having them be better athletes at the end of the day really comes down to us. And how we treat our kids and how we look for coaches. And Dennis provides so much information here that it's valuable, and insight is really needed in today's society. And I really did enjoy how candid he was with his kids raising and how he is as a coach and the things he looks for and all the success he's had with going through all the difficult times and the adversity he had. And if you ever met this man, he lights up when he talks about youth sports. And I am completely grateful for all the time he gave me, because we talked for a while for this interview.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.